Inside the Cross Podcast.
Thanks for coming back to a jam-packed edition of the Inside the Cross MLL Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined as always by Kyle Devitt, and later we will bring you an interview with New York Lizards defenseman Joe Fletcher, who, when I reached out to him to book the interview, described himself as being, I believe, well, awkward, which he has described himself that way to me several times, but also, quote, not that good at interviews. And the way it played out, it turns out that, Kyle, you and I aren't that good at interviews, or at the very least, I am not, given all of the technical difficulties that we ran into in trying to execute it. So that's basically the way we're coming at this podcast from. A lot of technical difficulties. We're getting to the end of the season, holding it together by a thread. But hopefully that's to the benefit of you, the listener, who gets to hear a little bit of Kyle and Terry getting loosey-goosey.
Yeah, it's going to get weird. Hang on.
Is that what the kids are saying these days? Getting weird, YOLO, all that stuff?
I don't know. I'm not a big YOLO guy, but yeah, getting weird is still fine, I think.
Are you a YOLT guy?
I don't even know what that is.
You only live twice?
Oh, that's
or awesome. I suppose it could be thrice. It starts with the same letter. Well, Kyle.
Long day.
Kyle, the tragedy of this, I suppose, and you know what? No. I am going to come up with an extremely valid excuse for why all the technical difficulties that we've run to in the outset of executing this podcast are not our fault, and it is because of the bad karma cast upon us by weather delays, disabling me from seeing the Ohio Machine's 23-22 win over the Denver Outlaws in what, if you don't like goalies or defense, had to have been not just the MLL game of this season, but several seasons. Go.
Yeah, I actually asked for the game, cause the game got delayed for several hours, not just like a couple. And I was like, oh yeah, no, I'll just set my DVR. I heard about it, did it remotely. I was like, yeah, no, I should be able to catch it. I'll just pop it up like 3 hours.
Well, now, and what's weird about it is that when the game actually got played, it was beautiful weather.
Yeah, it was when it stopped, it didn't look that bad. It was weird. It stopped like what, 3 goals in from the Outlaws, like first quarter.
Yeah.
It was weird because Bear said on the conference call that he's been involved with a bunch of rain games and delays, and he said that every time he's been involved with one, the team that's leading is always the team that suffers. And I mean, I don't know about suffers, but they definitely lost. But this was it was out of control. I watched a supercut of all the goals. It's on YouTube. I tweeted it out earlier this week. It's insane. Like, it's like the goalie's not there. It's like neither goalie is there. The ball's just going in the net. Like, it must have been awful to be a defender in that game.
Jesse Schwartzman was credited with 18 saves, 20 goals allowed. Got pretty close to 50% in a game that featured 55 goals. Legit?
Yeah, I mean, I from what I could tell, though, they moved him out and then put him back in, I believe. So it's hard to see, like, the supercut has, like, the goals and where they're scored and, like, in order. But the funny thing is the game winner from Harrison, you can't even really tell what's going on. But the ball just, like, goes in the net, and you're like, oh.
That was a really weird shot. I had communicated with Kyle about it a little bit in the wake of the goal, and I hadn't seen it at that point. And I think he called it, like, the best shot of his career, like one of the few times that particular shot has ever gone in. So I was like, oh, I got to see this. I was picturing, like, you know, one of those typical Kyle Harrison, ready alley dodge, shot on the run types. But no, it was like a two-step stop. It wasn't a step down. It was almost like a side-to-side shake. And then he almost was like pulling his body back away from the ball as he released it. The fact that it went in, I mean, regardless of whether it being an OT game winner that keeps your season alive, the fact that that shot went in is remarkable.
It was pretty awesome. I thought Holman's goals were pretty great, but obviously the star of that game, even though they lost, was Junior, just like playing with massive just hunger. You know, like if you're counting the Outlaws out because of their history of being chokers, like I am, you kind of have to give a second look at it just because Junior's on the team now. You know, and it's so weird to talk about someone that is, you know, let's face it, as old as he is, still just torching dudes and lighting it up from anywhere. I mean, he hit some distant shots in that game, and I haven't seen him do that for a while, since he was in Rochester. So he's got the hot hand for sure.
Okay, so that's obviously a big picture story that we can discuss as, you know, we move toward the playoffs, and it is an important one because as you look at the way this playoff bracket is shaping up, I mean, once again, you know, let me just jump ahead to the playoffs real quick. So obviously, you know, we've got three teams competing for the fourth spot. We'll talk about that. You know, whichever one of those comes out of that mix is going to be interesting. On the flip side, New York Lizards, we'll talk to Fletch a little bit about that in a sec. They're going to be interesting. They've got so many stars. Rochester Rattlers, upstart team, almost has that feeling of unbelievability. How are they doing this? But to me, the Denver Outlaws remain maybe the most interesting team heading into the postseason because you just, you feel like, it's almost, there's a little bit of Patrick Ewing theory going on, so, you know, you wonder about that. But then, in addition to that, like, it's like battling the law of averages. You know what I mean? So when you get so down on their chances, you feel like the inflexive reaction is they've got to get one at some point, and is this it? But moving back to this game in particular, you know, a couple of times over the course of this season, as we've talked about the Ohio Machine, which we've done a lot because of both of our, you know, mine probably primarily affinity for this team and their style, we've talked about their face-off woes. Now, first of all, the fact that they ran out two guys that got that both took 20 faceoffs is pretty outrageous. Secondly, the fact that they both got to better than 50%. And then thirdly, against a guy in Anthony Kelly who, correct if I'm wrong, is now in the injured reserve.
He is on the two-game IR. BJ clarified that there's still hope for him to make the playoffs, but I don't think a lot of us are buying that.
Okay, well, I will expect him to play in the playoffs, and I will expect them to dress a second faceoff guy because that's what history has suggested will happen. But to me, you could make an argument that, obviously, Eric O'Brien or Bobby Dottella's success is strictly related to Anthony Kelly's injury. But I don't want to make that argument. I want to hear more of an argument about, is this a sustainable thing going forward as it relates to the Ohio Machine's face-off success? And if it is, what does that mean? Because, you know, as the August issue cover of Inside Lacrosse magazine suggests, you know, we think that they're probably the, maybe not the most potent, but the most dynamic and most exciting offensive team. And if you're feeding them in this type of way, you know, getting close to 60%, what does it mean for their chances? Because I think that we were kind of always expecting them to be a, I don't know what, 40 to 45% team, if that, maybe.
Yeah, it depends on who you're looking at the map, who they match up with. If they match up with a team that has, you know, one faceoff guy running the two guys at him with and Dito and I'm sorry, I forgot his name off the top of my head. He's gonna kill me. O'Brien, sorry. If they have different styles, so O'Brien's a much more power guy. Dottella's really quick. Will win the ball to himself. O'Brien's really just in there to bang you up. And then they bring in Dottella. Dottella had a goal in this game. You know, it's something where you have the thunder and the lightning, you know, and that works well if the other guy is tired. You know, you can bring in a guy that has a different style. And when you go down for the faceoff, you have to think about, well, what am I going to do? What's he going to do? Where's my wing? Where's his wing? Is he going to try and win it forward? It's a different guy. It's a different approach. Whereas if it's the same guy every time, you know, you can kind of plan that out in advance. Like, you know what his moves are. Like, all these face-off guys are all buddies. They all have gone against each other, like, hundreds of times at this point. You know, and one of the things that happens is you either advance by doing that and get better and develop to being better against certain guys, or you just kind of fall off. And I think when you have two guys that have been, you know, both O'Brien and Dottella have been smoked by guys in the league before. So I think that when you have both of them and neither one of them is dominant individually, putting them together has a huge impact in every game where another team is using one guy. And the guys in the playoffs, you know, Lizards are going to use primarily Gurenlian, and even though he hasn't been doing that great since he got back from USA, from the World Games. You know, Denver is, you know, are they going to use Kelly? Are they going to use Hyken and Pennington together? You know, Rochester's going to stick with Ortolani. I think if you go in the playoffs, like, you have to keep dressing two guys. You know, you have to have every advantage because defensively Ohio is terrible. So if you have the ball a lot more and your offense is more dominant, you know, you need to get it to them. You need to have the ball more. And I think if Ohio has the ball more than other teams, they have a much higher advantage than I would say other teams do that even have better defenses, because Ohio's offense is so potent.
Well, I think that maybe one theme that is going to emerge over the course of the podcast is the issues that these playoff teams are going to be facing personnel-wise as they advance into the playoffs. And let's move on to what was a pivotal game on the weekend, only insofar as it, well, I suppose to a degree, kept Florida's chances alive, but also Boston losing really benefited Ohio and keeping them alive as well. The Florida launch beat the Boston Cannons 23-17, and Kieran McArdle had 10 points. Discuss.
Rookie of the year. Just won it. Congratulations. Great job. The best play he made in that game, by the way, I think was his second goal. Casey, it was a fast break, popped over to Casey on the left side. Casey didn't even cradle the ball. Quick stick it over to McArdle. McArdle's, parallel with the post and sticks it top right corner. It was a scoop shot over the shoulder of the goalie with no angle. It was unreal. And I was like, oh, rookie of the year. You deserve it. You know, and we'll talk about Wolf later, because Wolf really is the reason Rochester won their game. But I think McArdle, this was just the game that showed that he is the best rookie. And, you know, learning from Casey Powell is a good way to learn how to play attack in the MLL. And he has benefited the most from that. Florida's defense, you know, still not great. They still give up 17 to Boston. Boston at times, aside from Rabel, looked like they didn't know what they were trying to do. And I think when you're a team without a plan and you're a team that doesn't play, you know, or create transition or play well off transition like Boston, then, you know, you're in big trouble, especially when, you know, you're not at home.
And so now, I guess to that end, if you're Boston, how do you regroup? Because the, you know, the sense that I get talking to a couple of Cannons is that, and particularly the Cannons that were on the U.S. team, is that, you know, felt like they let one get away in losing an OT home game to the Lizards when their world team players were not present. And by let one get away, I mean a very pivotal game for the year. So now you go from that to giving up 23 to Florida, a team that's in the mix with you for the fourth spot. You, Kyle, you know this Boston team better than a lot of people, you know, pretty much anybody, and you also know this Boston team better than, I would assume, you know, a lot of other MLL teams. What's your sense of what their mental toughness is, how it will expose itself over the next 2 weeks in comparison or in context of what you saw from them last season, the season before, you know, in the intervening years since they won the championship, I believe in 2011.
I think it's easy to frustrate this team, personally. I think it's easy to get under their skin. It's easy to get them to play dirty and drop penalties from them. They have a lot, and it's not because of, I think a lot of people will say that's because of egos. I think it's more, and pride is part of being an eagle, but I think it's really the pridefulness that this team has about itself that it feels like it earned in 2011. And I think the shine is off the trophy now. Like it's great that you won in 2011, but what have you done lately? You know, you've had 2-3 pretty disappointing seasons now. Especially if they don't make the playoffs this year, which it doesn't look like they will, even though they have the tiebreaker of Ohio, but now Ohio has one more win. So how does that look in the big picture? I think at the end of this game, I mean, that kind of tells the tale. There was, you know, like 10 minutes of penalties at the end of the game. It's just Boston guys being upset that they're losing again. And I wrote this column a couple weeks ago about how Boston could have been so good this year. They lost so many one goal games. Well, guess what? Losing the one goal games is detrimental to your emotional health when you play sports. Like losing all of those close games is not going to be good for you psychologically. I mean, that's going to take a toll on you. It's going to be like, oh, we were so close. I feel like it's much worse to lose the one goal game than it is to lose by 10 or 8 or 6. You know, I really think the one goal game hits you harder. Losing the OT games hits you harder than just losing. And I think you see that in how this game in particular played out. I guess I conclude on that by saying, you know, I asked Coach Tucker on the call if he thought the USA guys, you know, were okay. Cause when we go on to some other games, we can talk about how the other USA guys, performed and it wasn't great. But I asked him specifically about the guys on this team, you know, Buchanan, Eck, Rabel, Belisle, and he said physically they're fine. But emotionally, he said he didn't think they were fine. And I think Tuck's a pretty straight shooter with stuff like that, and I think he's right. And I think it bears out in a lot of situations in this game and other games in the league.
There were 9 minutes of penalties assessed, with, let me do my quick math here, 2:14 remaining in this game. What happened?
No, it was just another practice. You know, it's like somebody said something, somebody did something, somebody got hit. It's like little kids playing soccer. Just a lot of smashing. No, it was actually kind of hard to see what actually happened. The way it played out was like ugly. And it was ugly enough that I actually, again, not to go back to the conference call, but I brought it up to coach the Florida coach, Stan Ross. And he's like, listen, we need to not do that again. You know, we have a responsibility to play smart lacrosse and we're coaches and we have to tell our players not to play that way because it's bad for the league. And he's right. But of course that leads us up into the next game that we should talk about, which is Chesapeake, New York, which had.
Well, before we do that, cause we're kind of sticking to chronological order. I mean, and we can basically just dismiss the Rochester 13-9 win over Charlotte, by saying that Rochester continues on their upward trajectory. This was a taking care of business game. And before we started, you told me that Charlotte is what?
Awful.
All right.
Wait,
so now,
did I say that? What did I say?
Either awful or terrible or something like that. And you know, I usually don't use those words.
Let me say why real quick. They're awful and terrible because it looks like a bunch of guys that have a ton of talent, but have never played together before. And everybody seems to just want to go to X and sweep and get to not 5-5, not 4-4, like 10-10 and take a jump shot. I mean, that's your offense? Like a clear out with a sweep from any guy that feels like he wants to, just runs, jogs to X and goes. That's not an offense. That's not how it works. You can't do that. Like you can do that against teams that are bad, but there are no bad teams in the MLL. And I don't know, Charlotte has a bright future with these young guys, but they really need some leadership there. And you know, it's just kind of a mess. They bet too hard on these rookies. And while the rookies, you know, Justin Ward has come through, Chan and Chuck's come through a couple times. It's not enough. You know, they bet too hard on the rookie class and they pay for it.
And it's interesting because there's something about rookies that they become second year players and you just don't necessarily know. You got to figure it out how to move forward and how to regroup and how to be better next year. But, you mentioned obviously, the capper for the weekend. You know, we can probably break this up, with our interview with Joe Fletcher. But basically the Chesapeake Bayhawks, who are eliminated from playoff contention, and the New York Lizards went nip and tuck through three quarters, and then the Bayhawks really took it to the Lizards in the fourth quarter. This game was played at Stony Brook, which is a little bit interesting.
I think the Lizards, I don't think it was nip and tuck. I think the Lizards had this game the whole way through until about 7 minutes into the fourth quarter, there was a play. Steve DiNapoli picks up a ground ball, runs all the way down the field, and they're up by three at this point, Lizards are, and instead of just moving the ball to X and, like, getting settled, he does a jump stop and looks to the crease, and there's, like, Chesapeake's defense crowds the crease. You can't feed the crease against Chesapeake unless you have a guy like Kevin Lavelle in there. But there's, like, literally four guys in the crease, and DiNapoli could have shot the ball. But instead he just turns and looks and fires a ball to, I think, Pinnell that was like surrounded by Bayhawks defenders. And needless to say, it did not go well. Ball went the other way. You know, Bayhawks got a good possession. I believe they scored on the next one, but they took away their momentum just like that. Like one play changes everything. No, and you know, the Lizards, the guys that are on the U.S. team for the Lizards, they look tired. They did not play well. And I think they would probably be the first people to tell you that. I think Seabold especially also had a play at the end of the game where he had the ball. He could have, you know, he needs to score. He needs to get the ball to someone else that can score. He's at X, and he throws a pass that gets like knocked down, and he goes after the ball and draws a penalty. I mean, that, and then you see him go to the box and he's barely jogging. Like, he's tired. You know, like, these guys are tired. Like I said, your earlier text said physically that they are fine. I don't think some of them are fine. I think Seaball played a lot of minutes in the World Championships. I think Garenlian played a lot of minutes, and it bore itself out in this game in particular, where he went 14 for 26. You know, Hartzell looked probably the best out of everybody, but also got away with a really bad slash on Joe Walter's ankle that was not called late in the third quarter, and actually is part of the reason that Cottle lost it and got a flag. But, you know, New York, not great on men up, and it's going to kill him.
So let's just talk about Marasco Spellina.
Oh, I mean, listen, here's the thing. Here's my Spellina theory, right? I think that plays like that, when you play the way that Spellina plays.
Well, okay, and so to describe it, JoJo dodges into the kind of the teeth of the defense, running through Brian Spellina, through his checks, gets free for, I believe, a lefty shot. He was coming lefty around, you know, kind of like sweeping from five yards on GLE to into like kind of the slot, and falls down as he takes a shot, scores, and then unsportsmanlike ensues.
Yeah, but like
hard slide from Polanco too.
Listen, that happens. I think that if you want these guys out of the league, and I'm not saying that I'm one of those guys, but I'm one of those guys. If you want them gone, you just go at them. I don't understand why teams, if you hate these guys so much, if you hate Spellina, you hate Polanco, you hate all the hacks in the league, go at them. Pull them out. They don't want to guard you on the perimeter. Okay? You will have a couple arm pads destroyed in the process, maybe break a pinky or something. But if you really, especially these young guys, if you're really looking to take them out, if you're really looking to score a goal and kind of quote unquote make your name, be prepared to get smashed and celebrate the goal. You know, that's one side of it. The other side of it is, you know, we kind of asked Fletcher about this. I don't know if it's going to make it depending on the technical difficulties. With Spellina and Polanco after the game kind of saying, you know, I'm a veteran, I deserve respect, blah, blah, I don't understand. Listen, that's to a point, okay? If you blow someone up enough times and they're still going to keep coming at you and they're going to get up and they're going to score, don't expect them to be silent. That's ridiculous. Like, you need to know that how you play comes with consequences against you as well as positives for your team and negatives for your team. Don't be surprised when you get a reaction when what you're doing is trying to get a reaction. I don't understand that. It makes me mad. And it's not that I agree or disagree with how they play or what they're doing, but listen, young guys, if you're going to talk, back it up, first of all. Second of all, if you're going to, like, expect to get beat down if you do talk, but if you keep scoring, who cares? Like, I don't care. I like it. Keep going. And if you're a big bruising guy and you send a message and that guy doesn't go to the cage the rest of the game, you keep doing what you're doing because you're winning. You know what I mean? There's so many sides to this, but I really feel like if the young, like, you can see it from both sides. The veterans want to get the respect. You know, they're going to throw an extra elbow. They're going to do whatever it takes, and they're survivors. They're vets for a reason. They're not there because they're nasty ball handlers. I'll tell you that right now. You know, they're there because they're tough. They throw bows and they will do anything to get their team to win. And that's something you need in the league. But young guys, like, if you beat the guy, you score, you win. Right? Would you agree with that?
Yeah. Well, okay. So let me just jump in because I feel like you're kind of run out of gas a little bit. Basically the idea is that respect is earned, and like, how you earn somebody's respect varies person to person. So how, quote unquote, Brian Spellina earns respect from JoJo Marasco and vice versa is not the same. So the idea that being old entitles you to respect is a flawed thought. Now, if Brian Spillina playing as tough and as willing to do anything for the win as he does is what Jojo Marasco respects, then he will respect him. And vice versa, if Jojo Marasco running through Brian Spillina checks and scoring is what earns Brian Spillina's respect, then he will respect Jojo Marasco. This whole idea of respect as it relates to something that you owe somebody else is so flawed, in my opinion, and it's not limited to the MLL, it's not limited to lacrosse, it's not limited to sports, it permeates all throughout, I don't know enough about foreign cultures, but certainly throughout American culture, where the idea of respect as being preeminent is so important, without really understanding that, like, you earn somebody's respect on the basis of what their code of ethics or purview on life is. And so, if somebody doesn't respect you, then maybe that's a direct pass, you know, express ticket to you not respecting them, but there's not much else that you can do about that other than feel a certain way toward them and continue to try and earn it if you care to possess it in the first place.
That's a much more cerebral explanation than I gave. And now my respect for you is being questioned because I feel like I just look like an idiot.
So wait, does that make you respect me more or less?
Probably a little bit more.
All right, well, let's talk to a guy that I have a lot of respect for.
When you blindside me, I don't see it coming.
Let's talk to Joe Fletcher, a guy who I have a lot of respect for because, and, you know, if you listen to this podcast, if you feel like you have a sense for my personality, you can probably imagine that, you know, I respect those guys that just kind of quietly go about their job, do it really well. You know, I don't like to use the stupid euphemisms like lunch pail guys or anything like that, because I don't necessarily think that's what Joe Fletcher is. I think he's just somebody that, you know, it's kind of one of the reasons that I have affinity for Steel Stamick as well. For all the talent that he's been blessed with and all the opportunities, that, you know, I don't want to delineate between being given and earned, but taken advantage of. You know, I appreciate the fact that when Steel talks about why he likes lacrosse, when Steel talks about sports, he talks about enjoying being a part of the team. And I think that, you know, for Joe Fletcher, you know, I've had an opportunity to cover him a lot, and I feel like I have a decent sense of this. You know, it's a similar type of thing. I think he just enjoys playing, and he enjoys being a part of the team, and that's why he continues to work to get better and develop his talent. And, you know, here we go. We get an opportunity to talk to him because his team is on the brink of going to the playoffs. Inside Lacrosse MLL podcast continues here with Joe Fletcher, defenseman for the New York Lizards. And Joe, you know, as you guys are kind of approaching the last 2 weeks of the regular season, realizing that you can impact your postseason fate, but also realizing that, you know, the goal of the championship is a little bit in flux, and in 2 weeks now you'll kind of reassert yourselves in search of a championship. What's the approach from this team over the next 2 weeks to make sure that you're sharp when the playoffs start?
Just getting back on, getting back off. Just helping each other with runs. In lacrosse, especially in college, really talks about not getting on runs, not letting up a lot of goals, and just in lacrosse too. Just don't give up consecutive losses. Just get on that winning streak. Let's pick up some momentum. That's probably the biggest thing right now is, we had a middle of the stretch that was great this year. We slipped last week, unfortunately, but now is the time to kind of regather what we have, kind of just get that focus up again and, start off for the playoffs.
The playoff situation is really kind of different this year as it has been in past years. There used to be just a weekend where four teams made it and basically anyone could win. You guys are actually still in contention to host. What is the home and away kind of feeling in the MLL? Is there like a big difference? Is playing at home easier? Cause you guys have played at a couple different stadiums at home. Is playing away actually a real disadvantage or not?
Definitely. I mean, having a home game, it's always probably a little easier for everyone. You just have that comfort. You can go through a routine that you're more accustomed to. You get to have the hometown support, which the fans of New York are awesome. We've had some great crowds too. So yeah, just being at home definitely helps out. And I think that's one thing that Coach Blue was really trying to reemphasize too, is that getting that home game will just make things a little bit easier for us in the future.
Joe, Charlotte's been called Loyola South. What's it like going against a fair amount of your former teammates?
It's different. It's a lot of fun. I feel a little outnumbered out there, which I miss playing with those guys as well, but it was fun to play against Piccone, Ward, Sawyer, and Hawkins just to see those guys out again. It was a great time.
Joe, two of your best games came this year against one of the better teams in Denver, and also against Boston with 6 and 7 ground balls. You've done a really good job of keying transition. Is that something different than what you did in college? Is that one of the bigger adjustments? Is getting the ball off the ground and moving it upfield right away to get the shot clock going?
Yeah, a little bit. In college, I probably did get some ground balls as well. And MLL game, the shot clock definitely, I think, changes things a lot. With that 60-second shot clock, teams are probably forcing a little bit more, taking a little bit more shots than they probably want to have in college, which is allowing those opportunities. In college, you play a lot longer possessions, and when we got those possessions, we wanted to make sure we had the ball, so we kind of just took it back and made sure we had the clear. On the pros, I think there's a little bit more focus on the transition game.
Joe, as I mentioned, you know, a guy who has made a career of guarding number ones. Is there a party that wishes you could go up against Rob Pinnell in a game?
I mean, we go against them in practice, him and Ned, and even Palisade, who are great Dodgers. You always love that kind of competition. Luckily, I was able to during the USA tryouts, and he reminded me who he is. He definitely takes you to the net really well, keeps his head up, and he knows how to finish or get those assists.
Up to for leadership and questions about being a vet in the league?
For me personally, I look to Brian Karalunas a lot and Steve Holmes, probably because I've been playing a lot of close defense with them. DK is an upstate guy, which I'm very biased towards upstate New York. A very similar personality. We kind of play similar to, not very strong, big or fast. We kind of just use the head a little bit more. And Steve just plays down low with me, and I've been rooming with him a few times on the way show. So just two guys that are very down-to-earth. They're very simple in what they do, but they do it well. So,
Joe, we kind of talked earlier about the USA team. Did you follow them through the tournament, and did you watch the gold medal game? And if so, like, what were your thoughts on it? And, you know, I think you have a couple Canadian guys on that team. Have they said anything, or have you played against guys that have said anything about the game?
Unfortunately, I really did not watch too much across during the month of July. I was working out, doing some other odd jobs, and just doing some playing other games. But no, I wasn't really able to watch. I did hear the Canadian goalie played very well, and we've seen him a lot. I saw him a lot at Bellarmine, and he does a very good job holding his ground, making those saves. So, tip up my hat off to him for what he did as well.
Joe Fletcher, really appreciate your time on the MLL podcast, and appreciate you navigating airport life for us. I know how difficult that can be.
Sorry about that.
No, you're good, man. We appreciate it. Good luck this weekend, and good luck as the postseason approaches.
Thank you very much.
All right, so Kyle, you know, we'll see what people make of that in whatever form that we were able to cobble it together via the editing process. Wondrous miracles of technology. And, yeah, we will move along with the podcast as we look toward week 11. Second last week, the penultimate week of the Major League Lacrosse regular season. What are your thoughts as you look ahead toward what this week has in store for us?
Well, first off, I think we should, you know, do a little how the sausage is made. Mr. Terry here had me write a playoff preview, and we basically only know three teams, and I picked one and put it in the September issue. Yes?
Yes, it is in the September issue.
I was upset about this because, A, I could totally be wrong, and B, I didn't get to say, someone oil me up, please. We saved that for the staff post, which will go up today, which I'm very excited about, and hopefully it doesn't get cut because it's pretty funny. So, looking at how the matchups go, it seems like, and not seems like it, no one can, none of these three teams fighting for that last spot can get it this week. They can be eliminated, but they can't actually secure. So if Boston loses, they're out. If Florida loses and Ohio wins, Florida is out, I believe. So, if Ohio wins, nothing really happens. If Rochester wins, though, against Ohio, Rochester secures one of the top two seeds. If Denver wins, they could secure the top two seeds depending on tiebreakers and depending on if New York beats Charlotte or not. So we have this whole complicated scenario where we're not sure who's hosting. We're not sure who that fourth team is going to be. Now, you and I think it's Ohio, yes?
Yeah, I haven't, like, for example, it's a staff debate that I haven't responded to yet. The thing I don't like about Ohio is their path. I just feel like that they have the tough, you know, the toughest path. But it's the same as Boston's, right?
Pretty much. I mean, yeah, it actually is the exact
It's just flip-flopped. So, by that token, you could make this the case that Florida has the toughest path because they're going to be playing the two teams that have the, you know, most to lose and that their, you know, season's on the line. Whereas, you know, Rochester is playing primarily for the number one spot at this point. And that's what, you know, who Boston and Ohio have, the best team, according to the record and everything else. So, I don't know why I'm rambling. I'm basically just stalling and trying to buy myself some time to think it through. But, you know, Florida, hot start, feel like they've fallen off a little bit. Not a huge surprise because, you know, Casey Powell is such a huge part of that team, and you could imagine him, you know, struggling with fatigue given that he hasn't played this many games in, like, 5 years. You know, flip side, Boston, kind of a similar issue compounded by the fact that they were so impacted by U.S. team. To your point, Ohio, least affected by the U.S. team. You know, I like Ohio. Okay, you know what? Yeah, I like Ohio. I just talked myself into it, and the reason is because I like the positive trajectory that they're on. I feel like beating Denver in overtime at home after a lightning delay, it just feels like one of those wins that a special team gets. And for Ohio, a special team is making it to the MLL playoffs. It is not necessarily winning a championship because this franchise has been, you know, so bad over the course of its existence. They've already done pretty incredible things in comparison to, you know, what they were. So, yes, I think it's going to be Ohio, and so do you.
Let me talk you out of it because I talk myself out of it, and I talk myself back into it. Ohio is the worst goal in the league. Not
I don't care. I really don't care about that.
It's not an opinion, by the way. It's a statistical fact.
No, I know. I mean, that's not something that really bothers me. It's kind of like it's akin to the Saints having the worst defense or the worst passing defense in the league and winning the Super Bowl, and then didn't the Patriots did the exact same thing, and then the Broncos were in the Super Bowl with a historically bad defense last year, if memory serves. No, that's not accurate. But the 2 years prior, the 3 years prior, the NFL had. I feel like it's something like that.
So you're of the mind that defense matters less in the MLL.
Ryan Danahy tweeted that defense wins games and offense wins championships in lacrosse. And I was thinking about that for a while. I don't have a firm opinion on that, but in this particular case, the Ohio's goalie play, because the other side of it is that, like, I know that, like, part of the best goalie is the goalie who's been the most consistent over the last 10 to 12, you know, 12 games. But you don't need to be consistent in order to swing a championship for your team in the playoffs.
Right. You have to have a hot game.
Exactly. And I think, you know, right now it's Phipps. If it's Rogers, both of them, I think have, and Phipps especially over the course of this season has shown me moments of heat, that could be duplicated, and, you know, I guess my way of saying it is that I think that they've got it in them, but I'm not even certain that they need it in order to win. You know, 50% could be good enough, particularly if you know, they find this right elixir at the faceoff X.
It doesn't have 50%. It's got 47.5.
No, I know, but my point is that 50% in a game might be enough. Yeah. And I mean, if you're 40% on the season, 47% on the season, you can get to 50% in a game easily. And not only that, but what I'm saying is that I can imagine him getting to 60 to 65% in a game.
I can't.
I can't.
From what I've seen all season, I just don't see him as, he's one of those guys that's like hot for a quarter and then he lets like 10 goals in. You're like, what happened? And then he makes three more saves and you're like, oh, okay. You know, he's a yo-yo goalie. You know, he's so up and down. He's so hot and cold. He's not, in my opinion, he's not reliable. And I think that that's a big concern. I mean, it's a bigger concern in the playoffs as it is heading into the playoffs. But, you know, Ohio's playing away at Rochester this week. That's a must-win game, you know, for Ohio. Ohio has to win that game. Rochester, obviously would love to win that game because Rochester would love to play at home in front of their 500 fans. So, sorry, that was a dig. I'm sorry, Rochester. I love you. But seriously, get some fans. And then you have Boston, who has two home games left, and they play Rochester and Florida. You know, Florida's out of home games. Done. And Florida is one of those teams that is much better at home than they are away, mostly because of the factor that you mentioned, which is Casey Powell traveling, not traveling, plays much better at home. That's just how it goes. Does not play great on the road. And I think that's a huge thing to look at. Now, you know, Queener hasn't had the most stellar season for Florida either. So if we're looking at goalies for all these teams, you know, Ohio, Boston, and Florida, the most consistent guy has been Jordan Burke, you know, aside from last week where he got lit up. But that's the only game where that's happened. That's the dude that's kept Boston in all those one goal games. You know, it's Jordan Burke, and he's bound to have one stumble. I mean, if you went goal through goals for everybody, like, nobody's had an amazing year except for probably Galloway. I mean, Schwartzman's had, you know, an okay year, like a good year, like statistically, but he has melted down at least three times. Like, absolute meltdown. Like, you need to get pulled, like, go sit down. And I don't think a lot of other goalies have had that happen. So, I don't know. I still think Ohio is it for that fourth spot. I still think they're there. I still think they're going to stay at four. I don't think they can advance past it. And I still think New York is going to get three. And I think it's going to stay how it is. It's going to be Rochester, Denver, with the home games against, you know, Rochester's going to play Ohio and Denver's going to play New York. And I think it's going to stay that way.
Okay. And that's all that matters about this weekend, because the only thing that matters out of the last 2 weeks is how teams shape themselves up for the playoffs.
Yeah, I think so. And I think you'll see a lot of, you know, Charlotte and Chesapeake will, you know, are having auditions. You know, you're going to see some new guys. They're going to audition some of the guys that have been on the practice squad, guys that have played well. McNeil for Chesapeake has had two good games in a row, and he's going to dress again, according to Cottle. So, you know, guys, if you stick on a roster and, you know, if your team's not doing that great, you might actually get a chance to play later on if you stick with it and keep working out and keep playing. So, there's tons of ways in the MLL. Hot news off the waiver wire. Strebel got picked up by Boston off of waivers.
That's huge. And I think that's going to matter. I think that that's exactly where he needs to be. And, I don't know if it's too little too late, but one point to you, about what you can do over the next two games. This is the P point on zone. In 2009, he put up 7 points in two games. And that was the launching pad for his career. He put up 41 points in 12 games in 2010. And now he's got 160 points in his career.
He's not had his best year this year, though.
But that's fine. I mean, you know. No, I know. I'm not somebody who broke into the league 5 years, six, you know, he's in his sixth, basically his sixth ML season.
I'm not trying to devalue your point, but it also goes to mind that guys are auditioning. You know, even guys that are names are auditioning. And just going back to Streber real quick, when the barrage dispersed, the league allocated not just Boyle and Sweeney to Boston, but also Strebel. And the rest of the teams complained. So Strebel went elsewhere. Strebel got shipped out, to, what team was he on? He played for Chicago, I guess, at that point. He got shipped out there instead, but I mean, he lives and works in Massachusetts. So, I mean, they've been waiting for this for a while. Is it too late? Hasn't had the greatest season. We'll see. I think he actually adds a great option as a secondary or third attack, and you can move guys like Berger and Rabel down low to play with Manny and have Boyle do more than just sit in the corner with the ball. So, I think Boston could still get in. Like, that's kind of my point, is like they have the best goalie out of the three teams. You know, they still have Rabel. Buchanan is likely to not be terrible for two games in a row. So I think that, you know, there's some hope in Boston, but I really do think it's going to be Ohio and not just because of the cover story.
Well, if my issue and argument is that I feel like they can't rebound, or one of the, they have to overcome rebounding from the last 2 weeks of disappointment, you know, like I said, first being overtime loss at home, second being a 23-goal outburst by the Florida Launch, Matt Strebel's addition, I think, could be an igniter that way. I think he's a strong personality. He's a strong competitor. I think he has the respect of a lot of these teammates, both guys that he has played with and won with in the past, and both guys that, you know him either personally or by reputation that haven't been a part of, or, you know, haven't played with him. And then, you know, secondarily, like, I think he is motivated to show well. You know, with a guy that's been in the league for 14 years, the question is always going to be about gas in the tank, and that remains to be seen. Can't speak to that. But, at the very least, it's going to be exciting because, you know, for MLL fans, you know, people talk about this all the time. They just, you like to see those great players that, you know, make final gasps in their careers in every sport. You know, certainly people that enjoyed watching the San Antonio Spurs win an NBA championship saw some of that. And so this is Matt Strebel doing that for him.
What is Matt Strebel's equivalent in another sport? Big shooter, joins a team for a final run.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that if he had been a one team his entire career guy, like, you know, I would compare him to Tim Duncan. You know, he's won multiple championships. I guess he only really won one championships in that barrage window. So, you know, it was a pretty condensed time frame. Not as if, you know, he was able to win at multiple ends or portions of his career in a Duncan slash Kobe Bryant type way. So maybe that doesn't hold up near, you know, to that degree. But I, you know, he's easily a top 15 all-time MLL player, right?
Yeah, I mean, I still remember the cover that you guys did and the story about him being the best lacrosse player in the world. Was that 07?
No, it was the summer of 09.
'09.
Yeah,
wow.
I think it was the last year of the barrage. It was after they had won their championships in 07 and 08. I think that's right. And yeah, I mean, you know, it was a relatively short window in comparison to some of the other, you know, guys that have occupied that space. You know, Rabel's probably been in that spot for, I don't know. That's a question. That's a conversation for another day. But yeah, no, I mean, it's a tough question, man. Yeah. I definitely think that there's a basketball player out there. I mean, he kind of reminds me of Ray Allen.
That's who I was thinking of.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there
you go. I was going to go with that. That's good. He got game.
Do you think Ray Allen's going to end up in the Cavs?
No.
A lot of people do.
Oh, my God. Please, let's start talking about LeBron on the podcast. So I shoot myself in the head.
There it is.
Oh, awful.
I'm going to, the outro track to this is going to be, I'm coming home. I'm coming home. We started with Roxanne and we're ending with I'm coming home.
Yeah, it's only going to work if you actually sing Roxanne like you promised you would. And then
Roxanne!
Oh, my God, it got weird. I told you it'd get weird. It got weird. Oh, my God. We'll see you guys next week.
Inside the Cross Podcast.